beginning of time, our very humanity has been based on connecting at the cellular level. Today, connecting on a cellular level has taken on a different meaning.
Welcome back to our third season of the No App for Life podcast. I'm Joni Ciani. I'm so glad that you're here. And if you're just joining us for this third season now, maybe you've already checked out our first episode with Kristen Bride. Again, we're so happy to be joined by Gene Rogers and the Screen Time Action Network for this very special series, really understanding the impact of social media on families, on kids, on teens, on young adults who grew up with this, and we sort of glazed over the impact, as I always quote from the Broadway show Evita, when the money keeps rolling in, you don't ask why. These high-tech companies have been making a lot of money without really understanding maybe some of the consequences that were happening on our developing children, teens, young adults. Gene Rogers is here from the Screen Time Action Network, who gave us this connection to be able to share these stories in such an important way. And Gene, Kristen's story is so empowering to parents. I don't even know how she's been able to be so strong and so impactful already in with what she's gone through. And I know you feel the same way.
Absolutely, Joni. Kristen and the other parents that we're featuring in this series are so courageous. They're in it to help others avoid the tragedy that they have experienced. And we're so grateful that with those corporations, there are whistleblowers. Mm. We're so grateful now that it seems to be a time in history when we can call out some of these wrongdoings, some of these tragedies, make tech, big tech accountable. And we can only do it together. So we're so happy to be partnering with
Tell me about it, when we get into this next series here. Kids get on YouTube, they see something funny, whether it was the cinnamon challenge that was hot for a while, we heard the dangerous stories about Tide Pods, and then there was also for a very, very long time this challenge about choking and kids ending up trying it for themselves with a camera in front of them. When did you first understand about some of these challenges? What did Fair Play and Screen Time Action Network hear from people coming in looking for help?
So, Joni, like many other things in the media, the challenges started out for good. You know, like the ice bucket challenge for charity. I remember my son Scott doing that and being so proud of him for taking on a cause. And like many other things, they turned dark. So, these challenges that we're talking about today ended in tragedy. And they came to us saying we had no control over something that our kids thought was fun. Mm. So the appearance that something that is dangerous could be fun is a theme that we see across the internet and across social media and has created these very dangerous challenges now that are not for charity, are just for kids who are looking to fill their time. And it's tragic.
So we're going to get right into it. Again, you're joining us here for this very powerful three-part series. And if you have friends or family, please share this with them. They're important stories that just are not getting the level of attention that they really need. As we mentioned, you don't get a lot of this on morning television shows or the morning magazine shows. It just, whether it's not good for ratings or brings people down or isn't very entertaining to hear about, we're not getting this. So the general public really just gets one side of social media and people talking about like, oh, this was so fun. And you just get that idea that, well, these morning hosts and everyone who ends their newscast says, follow me, you know, so we're not getting this other angle here. And so being able to share these stories, I know, was important to you, Jean.
It is. And these challenges are one of the more insidious ways that social media is getting to kids these days. And you don't see the tragedy behind it. Developmentally, they're in a stage where risk-taking is good for them. It's what they do. They start separating from their families. They start exploring the world. But we trust that they're going to be safe, and we can't trust that anymore. We'll see from today's story.
And again, thank you for being a part of this. Thanks for partnering with us. It's important work that we're doing. And now I'd like to introduce you to our two guests today. And you're going to hear from Judy and Joanne. And we'll be back with our third series after that. Let's start with you guys. Joanne, do you want to fill us in on your story?
Sure. Thank you, Joni. So my name is Joanne Bogard, and I'm from Indiana. And we have three children, two adult children, and our youngest son, Mason, is forever 15. So on May 1st, 2019, we were having a normal day. He went to school. We ate dinner, nothing out of the ordinary, just a typical day. Mason said, "Oh, I'm going to go up and take my shower." He said, "I love you, Mom." He gave Steve a hug, my husband a hug, his dad. And he went upstairs and he said, "I love you, Mom." And I said, "I love you too, buddy." And a few minutes later, we heard a noise from upstairs, and we kind of thought, you know, a little louder than normal. So, you know, at first we thought, well, he dropped a shampoo bottle or something. And we thought, oh, it was louder than normal. So Steve went up to check on him and found Mason unconscious with a belt around his neck. And so my husband's a fireman, and so he immediately started CPR. And Mason had no pulse. So he started CPR. And he did get a pulse back. Mason never regained consciousness, but he did get a pulse back. They got him to the hospital, put him on life support. You know, and the whole time our brains are, you know, why? Nothing, you know, he had no signs of depression or harming himself or wanting to die or anything. So it was just so out of the box for him. We didn't know what to think. You know, obviously we were assuming a suicide, but it just didn't make sense. So while we were in the hospital, and he was on life support, we were praying over him. And I Googled teen with belt around neck. And the number of online challenges that popped up. And if you're not familiar with challenges, they are posts that get put out on the social networks. It's a dare, basically, you know, and dares have been around for decades. But with social networking, these dares become, they do them alone, record themselves. They want to post that video so they can get likes. And a like to a teen, of course, is equivalent to, when we were younger, when I was younger, you know, how many people came to your birthday party? You know, you want to be accepted by your tribe. So anyway, so Mason, we were praying over him, and he was on life support. And then the videos that popped up for the choking challenge or the pass out game. And I just could not believe that I was seeing the things I was seeing, these videos of kids choking themselves, passing out, waking up and laughing and getting all of these likes. And we knew right then that that's what he had done, because just about a week or so before that, he had come to me. And Mason wasn't big on social media. He liked YouTube and he watched a lot of how-to videos. He liked to go fishing and hiking and make things at his tool bench, things like that. So he didn't really spend a lot of time on a lot of networks, but he was on YouTube a lot. And he had recently come to me and said, he came and he said, "Hey, Mom, I keep getting these pop-ups that are about challenges. Have you seen this? Have you heard this?" And so we watched a couple of them and I said, "Mason, do you realize that, you know, some of these can be dangerous?" So we talked about that. Didn't have anything about a choking challenge. I don't even remember which ones they were. I think one was a Tide Pod challenge or something. So we talked about how dangerous they were. And he said, "Yeah, I know." He said, "I would never do anything like that." And of course, I believed him. He's smart. He had made, you know, he was a good kid. He was smart. He was wise. We always called him our little old soul because he just understood people and things more than most people his age. So anyway, so we were trying to figure out, we talked about the challenges being unsafe, and I had no idea that this challenge existed out there. I knew there were challenges, but I didn't realize people died from them and hadn't heard any of that. I also didn't know that you could change the settings on the computer to not autoplay and to block certain things. And I was that mom who always checked their phones, and we talked about things openly and candidly that were dangerous, you know, pedophiles, things like that, but I didn't know about these things, so I was unaware. So anyway, Mason was on life support for 3 days and they declared him clinically brain dead. So we chose, because Mason was such a generous soul, we chose to donate his organs. So he was on life support for 3 more days while we waited for them to gather everyone and make the plans. And so we did that. And Mason saved 5 lives with his organ donations. So when we got home after the funeral, we got his phone out. And I was looking at it and I was scrolling through, and he had just the day before that recorded a video of himself, not posted in anywhere, recorded a video of himself in his bedroom alone with a belt around his neck trying to choke himself. He didn't pass out. Nothing happened. And he made this just matter of fact comment, "Well, that didn't work." So he said, "Come on, Scooby, let's go downstairs and eat dinner." And it was so obvious that he had no idea that what he was doing could have been potentially dangerous or deadly. So then obviously the next day he did it again. And what we found was the belt that Mason used to try it the next day when he was in the bathroom alone, it locked in place. So when he passed out, it's supposed to loosen and then you wake up. And so when he passed out, he just never woke up. He never loosened and he never woke up. So the coroner ruled it accidental asphyxiation by strangulation. And he said he saw the video and he said it was obvious to him that Mason wasn't trying to harm himself or hurt himself, and had no indication that Mason was suicidal or anything like that. So he ruled it accidental, which is sometimes not the case with some kids. So I found, or Judy found me actually, she saw Mason's honor walk, which got so much exposure. It had the honor walk is when they donate organs, the organ donation videoed it and they posted it on their website and the news channels picked it up. And it had over 40 million likes just on one channel, one news channel. And so I was getting all of these messages from people around the world. Sometimes I'd have to hit translate for the languages to see what they said. And so many of them, it was typically, "I've never heard of this. I'm sorry for your loss. Never heard of this. We just want you to know that Mason's message is being heard. And we've talked to our kids, our teens, our nieces and nephews, our grandkids about this. So we want you to know we're spreading awareness. And I thought, okay, Mason was always he always looked out for the underdog. He always talked, I want to join the army when I get old enough, mom, you know, I want to protect people. And so that's who he was. So I tried to follow his lead and just look out for the other people. So Judy found me because her son had a similar fate. And so I joined her private Facebook group, which I had no idea. There are over 200 families in this private Facebook group. And these are only parents who have found this private Facebook group who know that their child died of the pass out challenge or the choking game. So over 200 families, and that has to just be the tip of it. And so I thought, okay, it's time to step up and spread awareness. And it took me about a year to pick myself up and do these things. But so I joined a couple of organizations, Avaz and Children's Screen Time Action Network, and started a couple of Facebook groups with them or work groups with them. And we're trying to just spread awareness and kind of follow Mason's lead and let people know these things are out there. They're dangerous. And we need to hold these platforms accountable for the autoplays that just continually show these videos, because, you know, I'm sure Mason probably was in a rabbit hole when these auto feeds keep coming and he sees these videos and they look funny because these kids are waking up passing out, you know, from passing out. And it looked funny, I'm sure, to him. Or and at 15, his brain was young and not fully developed, of course. So, you know, he doesn't think of the consequences of the what ifs like an adult would.
And also, you know, as we're saying, the harmful videos, the ones that where kids really do get hurt or killed, they don't make it to YouTube.
Well, they're never posted, right?
Right.
Those videos, the kids don't see anyone dying because right. they don't
getting
get posted.
The message.
You're right.
So they're not getting that other side of the message. You evoked Judy's name a couple of times here, Joanne. So I'm going to have Judy come in. Very sad that you guys are part of this. The same club here. I hate to say it like that. And again, you're also mentioning this weird paradox that you also found each other on Facebook and people clearly heard more of Mason's story and clearly may very well have saved more than just those five lives, just with your amplification of the downside. Judy, you've been a pioneer of this outreach for a very long time, again, with Eric's cause, if you want to fill us in on your story too.
Thank you, Joni. And Joanne, I'm just sitting here riveted listening to you. Mm-hmm. I could not talk so eloquently a few years out from Eric's death, and I may bounce around a little bit with my story. I do want to, what you were talking about, Joni, with the congressional hearings,
mm-hmm.
It's been a long time since I've had to be peeled off the wall, and I've only listened to a short part of it, mm-hmm. which was when Senator Blumenthal was grilling, I believe it was the TikTok representative,
mm-hmm. yeah.
about the challenges. And he just kept saying, well, you know, our fact checkers didn't find anything. And Senator Blumenthal said, well, our staffers set up two different accounts, one which was kind of general and one is as a 13-year-old. And all of this disturbing feed was coming in, I'm paraphrasing, and it's too disturbing to show here in Congress. And the representative said, well, we haven't found that. And I don't know what you're looking at, but we certainly don't have
yeah.
it. That had to, I needed to be peeled off the wall from that.
And
it's been years since I've needed to be peeled off the wall.
I'm every time we sit together on our group, I get so aggravated and so frustrated because I think I can't believe, and we'll bring Jeremy in here. Maybe you can help me, Jeremy, because I can't believe that people that are parents, that have children, that are connected with the safety division of different platforms could turn a blind eye to this in the name of profit. It just blows me away. I think I'm just so blown away that anyone, because we know, we've known this, you know, we've known this for so long. I mean, as I mentioned, I wrote a book about it. I did my documentary film, and I'm no genius here. It's plain and simple. Families are dealing with this every day. The meltdowns of kids in kitchens and bedrooms from material that's been being exchanged. We've all been living this. So this sort of blatant ignorance from some of these platforms is just excruciatingly maddening that any human being could accept some of these, you know, collateral damage in their wake of profit is just evil. I mean, it's just, I can't believe it, but that gets me going. Judy, I want you to tell us about Eric, though.
I will. And I just, similar. Just before I forget, Joanne, the group was actually started by three of us together, spinning off from another group. And it's primarily parents who have lost their kids. There are some members whose kids have survived, and some of the members are close family, friends, and people who want to promote education. Initially, the group was around trying to get awareness out there and what are we all doing collaboratively, but it quickly morphed also into an extremely safe place, a non-judgmental safe place for people to share. Nothing gets shared outside of the group.
Mm.
Unless you ask the person who posted it, if I can share this, even if it's a public link, we ask if it can be, we're so respectful. Some of the greatest people I've ever met, and I wish I never had to.
Mm.
Joanne included. And, you know, your strength has been tremendous. You've pulled me along in a lot of ways. People don't realize that. People think, you know, and I'm not the first. There are people, there was a surge of awareness going on around 2005, 2006. There were a surge of deaths around this then. But Eric, so I'm a single parent forever. My ex-boyfriend and I found out I was pregnant at the ripe old age of 45 and a half, with a 1% chance of getting pregnant. We were using birth control. It was the wrong time of the month. And lo and behold, right after we had broken up for the third and final time, guess what? So, he's wonderful, a wonderful part-time dad. We didn't stay together, but it was a wonderful part-time dad. Eric taught me how to live in so many ways. He was so much like Mason in so many ways, an old, old soul, forever 12. Eric died when he was 12 from this. And we moved to Santa Monica from Mar Vista in Los Angeles, about 10 minutes away for what I felt was a better school system for middle school. I worked in Santa Monica as well. And I said, okay, I'm going to be in meetings until about 4:30, and then I'll check my messages and let me know if the baseball practice, if his friend's mom was taking him and whatnot. So I get out of my meeting at 4:30 and I listened to my messages, and he was like out of breath because it's sort of uphill home from school, the few blocks. And okay, Mom, just got home. I'm going to call the Bonners, find out, are we going to baseball practice? And there was also a message from the friends saying baseball's been canceled because of rain. And so I called his cell phone, didn't pick up, called the landline, didn't pick up. This has happened before. And usually within a minute, he's calling me back going, sorry, Mom, I was in the bathroom. I mean, we were that, you know, it was like that kind of
relationship.
communication. We were not hiding from each other. And called both phones two or three times. I knew something was wrong. I grabbed my keys. I drove home. That was just, I just dropped everything, grabbed my keys and drove home. And the door was unlocked. I went in. I knew something was not right. I was shouting his name, nothing. His keys were there. I went into the bedrooms first to look, and then I came back out. And the way it is that you walk in and like the living room's right in front, but the kitchen's off to the side, and there's a doorway from the kitchen into the dining area. And I ended up walking into the living room, and then I made a U-turn. Eric had used his Boy Scout rope with a very intricate knotting system that would have unlatched. And the pull-up bar, we had a pull-up bar in that doorway. He could do a dozen pull-ups already at the age of 12. I mean, literally, he was really determined to be in the best physical shape that he could. And I just screamed bloody murder. And Eric, his feet were on the ground. This is something very important that differentiates a lot from suicide to choking game, pass out game, pass out activities in general. They're in connection with the floor, sitting, kneeling, standing. Again, it's part of the no intent. I just ran to the door, and Eric and I were, I'm short, I'm about 5'1", and he was about my height. I couldn't do anything. And I ran to the front door and I screamed bloody murder. My downstairs neighbor came flying upstairs, a big guy. Turns out he knew CPR also. He was a CPR instructor. I did not know that. And he immediately, within seconds, got Eric down. Another neighbor came over. Someone called 911. It was just total chaos. Within a few minutes, they were there. They got him to the hospital. It took over an hour to get his heart restarted. I won't go into all of the detail of that. On some level, I knew it was too long, but with kids, they always go that extra mile. And they put him on life support. And we were in the hospital for 24 hours with that. That evening, the police came to the hospital sometime that night. My brother was there. Eric's dad was there. And they said, this was not a suicide. This was the choking game. And we looked at them and we said, what are you talking about? And they started to explain it to us. And we just looked at them and we said, you're crazy. Eric's too smart to do something that's stupid. And they were definitive about it, and we thought they were absolutely nuts. We knew it wasn't suicide, but we thought they were crazy. And the 24 hours passed, and they were going to do another test. And people, I mean, over the course of that night, at some point, a resident came in and said, you know, he's not on any sedation. And normally if someone is in a coma and not on sedation, there's movement, there's twitching, there's muscle movement. And a respiratory therapist came in to clean the tubing out, and there was no gag reflex. We knew, but we didn't want to know. And there was no question. And I mean, we were definitive that we wanted to donate his organs. And I was just absolutely devastated that they had used so much medication to get his heart restarted that it destroyed the organs. His tissue and ligament donation helped over 160 people.
Wow.
Either 163 or 167. I have the number somewhere. I actually got two thank you notes that went to the organization and then were delivered to me. There's no record keeping in the same way as there are with major donor organs. But that touched me in a way. This little 80-pound soaking wet, fully dressed kid could help 160 some odd people like that.
Judy, I want to bring in Joanne and Jeremy Edge, who's also a licensed professional counselor in the Dallas area. When you're sharing these stories, And you have been doing this work and outreach to so many other families. What have you been up against?
So I know when Mason was still in the hospital on life support, and we had already determined that he wasn't going to survive this, so we decided to donate organs. I asked the trauma surgeon, what do we do? Mm. Where do we go from here? Right. You know, I'm not asking the heart, what do I do to save someone else? This can't be real, you know? And she said, and I can still hear her voice, tell your story, tell it and tell it again and tell it again, and it will make a difference. She said, just continue to tell your story, and that is what's going to make a difference. So that was my stepping off point, was talking to news channels and things, which I still continue to do 2.5 years later. You know, I still talk to news channels who have no idea that this thing even exists. And in my world, I think, how do you not know this exists?
Right,
but it's
right.
Still, yeah, there are still people who have never heard of these things. So with me, I know the challenge I find is, why won't these social networks put morals before money? Why won't they put safeguards in place? Why won't they just do the right thing? And obviously, politics and money are huge factors, but there are the one bill that's out there, it's called the CAMRA Act, and it's out there now, and it hasn't been voted on yet, but it is a bill that will allow long-term government study of how the internet is affecting children. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is such a huge factor, because if you can get that information and get those statistics, then you know, oh, we need to look at this. We need to put education in schools, just like we put drugs and alcohol and sexual activity, mm-hmm. things like that. You know, in the 70s, when we started rolling all of those things out, hey, we need to educate our kids. Let's not brush it under the rug. Well, now we're at a point where we need digital citizenship classes in school.
You know, we started media advocating for media literacy back in the 70s. And I've taught media literacy. I've taught digital. I mean, we teach it. And Jeremy, maybe you can pop in here. What I have found, what I was watching and observing with a background in psychology as well, is it doesn't take a genius, and it doesn't take another 10 years of longitudinal studies to actually understand what is happening when kids are receiving messages and your reward system of, I mean, it's classic, right? The reward system, Jeremy, right. If you want to explain that, we know that this has an impact. Jeremy, what are you dealing with in regard to families? And as both Judy and Joanne were saying, you know, you're thinking that every parent should know about this, but no one seems to really sound the alarms until there's some kind of personal experience. What are you seeing, Jeremy?
Right. No, that's a good point. So I'm a professional counselor. My practice primarily helps kids and young adults with problematic screen use. So social media is a really big one. So a lot of families come to me saying their kids are using too much screen time. It's affecting their grades and affecting their relationships and things like that. And so I think you're very much right that you see families start to have, wow, this is a really big issue when it affects their families in particular. And so I think there's also a big problem I've seen is there's such a digital divide. There's so much of in generations, this happens, parent and child, there's misunderstandings and a lot of things. I've seen there's so much misunderstanding that parents just, it's a complete unknown when it, right. whatever modality, whatever platform it may be, social media, video games, YouTube, sexual stuff, pornography, whatever it may be. There's so much information that is unknown for parents just because they're not exposed to it. It's not the parent's fault. It's so rapid information. It's almost impossible to keep up, even for a child, even for a teenager, right? Like if you don't, jump on TikTok right when it starts, you're in the dark ages. And so I think it's really, really, really difficult for parents to be able to to be aware of some of these new things there, because they can happen to become trendy very, very quickly. Like this, mm-hmm. these challenges and these things that where they think it's fun and exciting. They're
and
getting
seems,
that.
It seems benign to parents at the, they're right. having fun. This is what kids do today. Oh, well, right. I did something different. And then because there is no education for parents, I always said parents just end up parenting by consensus. So it's like, oh, you're letting your kid watch YouTube? Oh, okay, me too. Oh, okay. You know, there is nothing out there that's really explaining it. So I didn't mean to interrupt, but go ahead.
No, you're right. You're right. It's a good point. It's they see it as like, oh, it's an innocent, fun thing. They may associate it with how they interacted with screens growing up. Like, oh, you know, I watched Looney Tunes growing up. Like, it's not that big of a deal. Or, you know, as the adult saying, oh, they're on screens all the time being productive and making money. So it can't be that maybe that bad for their kids. All the other kids are doing it as well. And they seem to be quote unquote fine. Other parents are not really getting involved too much. So it probably is an okay thing, kind of like a group dynamic. And the piece of what you're talking about too earlier, Joni, is the dopamine release that the kids get whenever they are on these platforms and just experiencing online interactions. It's so, I've been having people refer to it as crack for kids. Mm-hmm. And whether it's video games or a social media platform, but I mean, it's not an actual drug, but it is a very, very, very enticing stimulation or behavior for kids. Whenever kids' brains are desiring a lot of novelty, a lot of risky behaviors, they're driven for excitement. Well, there are so many extremes within the online world. And if they see something extreme that their friends are talking about, or their friends said, hey, check this out, even if they think this is bad, it's exciting. It's, oh, they think it's cool, maybe. So I want to get involved with it. You know, the example of the choking challenge, the choking game. And so it can be a really, really dark hole.
The choking thing, and Judy had that great article. You got some nice coverage for Eric's cause in the article, which kind of went to the amplification, the difference between social media use today and the one-way delivery of a cartoon is very, very different. Mm-hmm. But people are like, oh, you know, kids did that all the time. There was, you know, skateboarding challenges and, oh, you know, so it just happens. But Judy, can you explain how you were explaining in that article, what is the actual difference when these messages, these challenges, these dares are amplified to the level that they're amplified through social media?
You know, it's a complicated issue altogether. One of the things that we developed, this is where I got my steam, because Eric's school just, they wanted to wash their hands and just go on. And that ticked me off beyond belief, in which with a licensed marriage family therapist, they said, well, we won't use anything that's out there because it's all created on the old DARE program of like, this is your brain right. on it. You know, lend them the fry pan, mm-hmm. you know, this is your brain on drugs. And kids realize down the road that doesn't work. We've realized that doesn't work. So we created an educational program based on best practices. And it's meant to be a module in a risk resiliency program or a risk prevention program, along with drugs, alcohol, driving, this. And, you know, we keep revising it and we keep updating it. And we call it knowledge is power. And what they're getting from screens is half of the story. They're not checking it out with a trusted adult. If you even look at television shows for kids nowadays, at least what Eric used to watch, I would say to him, where are the parents? Parents are comic sidekicks. The kids are left to figure everything out on their own. And they're modeling this. This is even pre-digital age.
Right.
Pre-like super digital age. And parents are left to be comic sidekicks. And a lot of parents nowadays also, they're more interested in being friends with their kids than being parents. So we have a dual thing. We help kids understand where they're, and the beauty of this also is it can be taught by teachers. It's fully scripted and it's free. It can be an assembly, it can be a class, but we help kids understand where they are in their brain development and why it's hard for them to make good decisions without the input of a trusted adult. Right. And we have an evening for parents that we kind of call how to expand your parenting toolkit. learn about a dangerous, a dangerous challenge, and how to talk to your kids so your kids will listen, how to give them that space. There are a number of things in there, from your nervous system, the parent's nervous system really regulates the kid's nervous system. Parents don't realize that if they're not grounded when they're talking to their child is going to also pick up that angst, and talking about how to give them the space to come to them. And the fact that electronics are a privilege. They are not a right. They are not a rite of passage. Right. They are a privilege.
But one of the things just to, you know, when I started working on this years ago, and I knew through my college kids, because remember, I was exposed to Facebook in 2006 before it even went to the general public. So it was very quick to come to this conclusion that my students, my 3-hour interpersonal communication class was turning into 3 hours of group therapy every day. And this was before this new product, service, or whatever it is, went to the general public.
I think the biggest thing for me, I think awareness is one thing. Educating not just the kids, but the parents in the community. You know, there are a lot of outreach programs in all communities who could offer classes to parents. You know, even in the schools, the PTA groups could offer classes to parents just for education and awareness on this is what's going on. This is what's happening. This is some advice. This is how you, as mom and dad, or caregiver, this is how you can approach your child at the dinner table and ask them, what do you see on TikTok? What do you see on these platforms? We don't want to take your social community away. You know, these online social communities, all of them, the platforms, we don't want to take them away from you. We just want to make them safe. We want to make them safe for you. Just like, you know, it's not allowed. The world can't just upload a video to cable TV that has porn in it. You know, there are laws about that. You just can't do it. It's harmful. It's hurtful. Right. It's harmful. So why not apply that to the internet?
Right.
And to date, they haven't, and they need to. And of course, Congress typically won't pass those laws without proof and studies and things like that. So it's time. It's time for some laws, whether it's to, you know, use artificial intelligence to recognize age verification, you know, putting it not just on the social platforms, but maybe the cell phone carriers and things. When kids have a smartphone, you know, is this being bought for someone under the age of 18 or 16 or whatever it's determined, we have to turn, by law, we have to turn these safety features on, you know, and only mom on her online account can turn them off. So, I mean, there are so many things that could be done.
Right.
And we're just not doing them. And why?
I just watch people like going like, yeah, I can't really give it up because I'm making money from it, or I'm getting famous from it. And so it's really hard to squash something that is dangling fame and fortune in front of you.
Right. That's a good point.
You know, I mean, the paradox is so complex that it's not like cigarettes where you're like, okay, yeah, I know you get some pleasure, but we can ban. That's an easy ban. This is so ambiguous in the benefits and the harmful effects. It's like this floaty water thing that you can't put your finger on. Jeremy, what were you going
to
say?
No, that's a good point. I think there's a lot to that, to be honest. And I think if we're able to at least help provide some education on appropriate use and the heart of what that is, right? What's the core? What does appropriate use look like? And right. So if you're going to go online to do something productive, you're going to go on to Google Classroom and upload your homework and work on your homework. That's very productive. That's very good work. If you go online to talk to your friends, you can use Discord or WhatsApp or Snapchat to talk with your friends to say, hey, let's go meet up and play basketball or something. That's a very appropriate way to use that platform. Now, if you use that same platform to upload a inappropriate picture of yourself to send some nudes back and forth. Well, that's an inappropriate way to be able to use that platform. And so that the core piece of that is it's inappropriate sexually exploitation and child pornography, right? If it depends on the age, but that's an inappropriate use of it, right? So if we're able to kind of help, provide just some insights to our kiddos of like, look, this is okay. Like platforms can be okay, right? Instagram, TikTok can be okay. It's how we utilize it. A lot of times with my clients, I say, look, it's, social media and technology is like food. We could eat McDonald's, cheeseburger every day, but we would feel the effects of it. We would feel the negative effects of that. It would taste good in the moment, but we would feel really, really bad. Or we could have maybe a hamburger on the weekends every now and then, mixed with some veggies and salads and other things that are healthy, and it would enhance our lives. It would add value to our lives overall. So I think that can be like the point of it. How can we utilize these products and the internet and screens as a healthy means rather than focusing on, rather than just saying, okay, so you figure it out, kiddos, good luck, right? Like, I think we need to be involved in to be able to help guide them in those conversations. One thing that I wanted to go back to, if possible, is we're talking about these different accounts, and Joanne, you had some great ideas of being able to help authenticate, the age and things. I recently had a client say, okay, so their kid's using Instagram, but now they're using what's called a Finstagram account, a fake Instagram account that they use and set up for inappropriate pictures and getting inappropriate stuff. So if there's a way to track the IP or to track, maybe on a technology standpoint, if this same account, right, is being used for two different ones, then that is still, the restrictions are still there no matter what account you set up. And so at the technology side of it is beyond me, but like there are ways to be able to do that, I'm sure, right?
What was amazing was my students who were the best guide to being able to, they should have been the ones questioning TikTok and everything because the congressional members had no idea. So my students were like filling me in. They're like, oh, no. Like, this is the question that needed to be asked because if you're using it, I mean, I was like, okay, you need to go to Congress because they're the users. They know exactly how it is being used and how it's being affected. And they're able to do that questioning in a way that no congressional member can do. Joanne? What were you going to say?
If you give these kids a voice, whether high school kids, college kids, if you give them a voice, they will tell you what's wrong with it. And they can also tell you, this is how you fix it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, giving them the voice and saying, because they know that it's, most of them know at a certain age, at least by high school, they pretty much know this is not healthy for me to be in 100%. This rabbit hole, having my autoplay on and being on this same platform watching videos for 3 hours when I know I have homework to do. They know that, then may not know how to get out of that rabbit hole and how to make themselves stop because of that dopamine and the addiction and all the things that go with that. But they know it. They're aware.
I wanted to thank you guys so much for getting the story out there, for being able to have this opportunity to make sure that we know Mason and Eric and that they will not be forgotten and that as parents, as mothers who have gone through, I'm in total awe and honor to be able to speak with you in the strength that you have moving forward in helping out so many other families and all the work that you do. So again, thank you guys so much. Was there anything that you wanted to get in before we wrap up here?
I just want to thank you for helping us spread awareness, Joni. Thank you for having us today.
All right.
I do too. It's so important. And I'm excited to be part of this new journey to help really try and make a difference. We've been going through the educational piece of it, but now with the legal trying to get laws passed, and it's generating a lot of good creativity. And just one thing also is that I appreciate that you're separating this, which is challenges, unintentional deaths. right. unintentional injuries, from suicides. These are so often, particularly pass out and choking game deaths, are unintentionally, just because medical examiners, police investigators aren't aware. They look at it and they immediately check the suicide box on so many families. And parents sit in blindsiding despair. What did I miss? They didn't miss anything, except that they didn't know that these challenges existed.
Oh, it's so heartbreaking. And, you know, when your kids are just sitting there watching YouTube and you're thinking that that's, you know, they have a few laughs here and there, as you're saying, you don't know. You learned about a pop-up, you know, who knew? So hopefully we will be able to get some laws passed and find some accountability and make some immediate changes. And Jeremy, thank you so much for all the work that you do. You are Jeremy Edge and located in Dallas, Texas. And I'm sorry to see that you're so busy these days.
Thank you for inviting me. Yes, my practice is escapingthe.com. You can find me online. And thank you, both of you, Joanne and Judy, for so much of your strength. I mean, not just your story, but just kind of your strength and kind of what you've been able to do to pave the way for helping so many families.
Thank you so much for listening to the No App for Life podcast. And again, thank you so much to Gene Rogers at Children's Screen Time Action Network. Gene, I want to make sure that people have an opportunity to get in touch with you and a little bit more about the network.
Joni, I'm so glad that No App for Life was able to give voice to these stories. Again, just remembering, these are very involved parents. They talk with their kids about social media, about drugs, about these challenges, and it's still happening. So we're here to give them a voice, to give them a space. At the Screen Time Action Network, we have 7 work groups on different topics, and they're really the heart of the network, where if people want to get involved, if they want to take action, we will support that action. We will support you becoming a member of the network and becoming a member of a work group. So you join by visiting us at screentimenetwork.org. Membership is free. We have a great resource library where you can access some articles on the topics that you've heard here at No App for Life, and we would love to have you join us.
Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next time right here on the No App for Life podcast.